Welcome in, everyone, to another episode of the Double Dribble Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Harper, head basketball analyst of Tide Illustrated of the Rivals Network. You can find me on Twitter at HarperNation24. And this podcast is dedicated solely for the cover Alabama basketball. And what an exciting time. What an exciting night to be an Alabama basketball fan. You got treated to an incredible game. That pretty much everybody knew would be incredible. And if you like offense, which 98% of people do in basketball or basketball fans, got to see a very good offensive basketball game from start to finish. Alabama won 98-93 over the Florida Gators, who have been red hot, winning 7 of their last 8 coming into this game. And I said it on the last podcast, which I apologize for. The last one, I accidentally put a different episode on, so I appreciate everyone that, you know, was patient, waited, you know, an extra day for me to upload the correct episode. I wanted to make sure to get that right. But I said on the previous episode, kind of previewing the Florida game, that Florida matches up better with Alabama, probably better than any other team in the SEC. Sure, you have Tennessee and Auburn, who are elite defensive teams, and they can be good offensively as well. They can put up a lot of points when they're on. Florida, they have the front court and the rim protection with Hang Loten and their Samuel and the host of big guys that they can just rotate in and out. And then they have the guards with Clayton and Richard. And, I mean, Kugel didn't play much tonight, but they have the guys pulling that can just light it up from outside. And they did early on in this game, got them out to a double-digit lead in the first half, early second half. So it was going to be an interesting and a big task for Alabama to play, especially without one of their best players in Latrell Reitzel, who was out for the game with a concussion that he sustained yesterday in practice. And judging by Rylan Griffin's Band-Aid over his eye, you can pretty much tell that they probably bumped heads in practice and Latrell got a concussion from it. Surprisingly, Rylan didn't, but obviously had a laceration over the eye. And you could probably see that it affected Rylan throughout the game. He just didn't seem himself, especially playing at home. And we'll kind of dive into the stats as we always do here in a second. But overall, my initial reaction, going back and rewatching the game just a minute ago, was, man, I have no idea how Alabama won that game. It was all heart, grit, determination. I mean, all the adjectives that you can describe of a winning basketball team, they showed it. They had no business winning this game just because of how poor they shot from three, how well Florida shot overall from three, majority of the game. They kind of went cold late. But majority of the game, it seemed like every other shot they were shooting from three. They were hitting tough pull-up, mid-range twos. I mean, they were hitting everything. And I thought Alabama played decent defense. I mean, it wasn't great. They obviously gave up 85 points in regulation. But I thought they defended pretty well on the initial shot. Now, they got several offensive rebounds and got some easier looks off of that. But Alabama's initial shot defense was pretty good. They got beat on a lot of back cuts, watching the ball too much. I noticed that. I think I counted up to 6 or 7 back cuts, back curls, things that shouldn't happen in a college basketball game if you're playing proper defense, if you're paying attention to your man, keeping your head on a swivel. But give, you know, Todd Golden a lot of credit. He schemed up a very good offensive game plan to throw at Alabama, knowing that they struggle with that. I mentioned to someone during the game that it felt like the Clemson game over and over again, to where Alabama would make runs, but Clemson always had an answer for it. And that was Florida. It seemed like every time, especially out of a timeout, Todd Golden, I think, drew up 5 or 6 straight possessions after timeouts or media breaks, to where they had the first possession that they scored on. That's just good coaching. Just great game planning, great play drawing up in the timeout, and knowing what Alabama struggles with and attacking it. And that's really what Florida did a lot of the game. But that heart and determination, grit, whatever you want to call it with this team, they have a lot of heart. And you can tell they really want to win. They play for each other. And you can tell in the post-game comments to where we're really finding our – Grant Nelson mentioned that they're really finding their identity in each of their roles. And majority of them is to play defense, rebound, and whoever scores, scores. Obviously, Mark Sears had a streak come to an end of 20-point games consecutively. But he would be the first to tell you he doesn't care about that. He would rather have the win. And that's just kind of how this team is. Grant Nelson had 22 points tonight. Typically, he doesn't score that much. He does a lot of the dirty work inside recently and scoring when he's called upon. It's just the next man up mentality for this team, and it's really fun to watch. It's the reason that they're in first place, 11-2 now, 19-7 overall, and they're sole possession of first place in the SEC still, and going on to a road game at Rupp Arena against a Kentucky team that just lost on the road to LSU, a team that Alabama has put up over 109 points on two games in a row playing against them. So that could be a winnable game in Rupp. I'm not expecting a win, personally, but that's a game that Alabama, off of this game against Florida, because I personally believe Florida is playing better than Kentucky is right now, even with Kentucky beating Auburn in the jungle this past Saturday. There's not a team in the SEC outside of maybe Alabama playing better than Florida. And Alabama took game one of two this season against Florida as they travel to the O-Dome later this year. So let's kind of dive into the box score a little bit. Looking at full team stats, just kind of seeing what sticks out. They both shot the ball about the same, 44% for Alabama, 43% for Florida. Each shot 81 to 84 shots respectively. From three, Alabama made it more respectable the second half, making six threes, while Florida, I believe, only made three the rest of the game, after hitting six in the first half. So Florida finished 9 of 30, 30% overall, and Alabama finished 8 of 32. So 32 is right on average of shooting per game. They kept shooting. They got some pretty decent looks. I thought several were rushed. Jaren Stevenson took, I believe, four in the first 7 or 8 minutes of the game, which, they're open, so you don't want them to tell them to turn it down. But once you miss your first three, you kind of want to try to go and get an easier bucket instead of just hoisting it, considering he's not a lethal shooter like Latrell that you just tell to keep shooting and you'll hit it. But overall, they ended up making it semi-respectable, 8 of 32. Florida, 14 of 18 from the line. Alabama, 16 of 20. And where I think the game was really won was the rebounding and the points in the paint. I mean, Alabama out-rebounded Florida, the number one offensive rebounding team in the country. Alabama being a undermanned or undersized front line, out-rebounded them 54 to 44 overall, but 21 to 17 on the offensive boards. That's insane. So Alabama dominated the paint. They scored 56 points in the paint to 40 for Florida. I mean, that's very surprising considering the rim protectors that Florida has. I feel like Alabama got the looks they wanted when they spread them out, went five out, and got the rim protectors away from the basket. And when they did that, Sam Walters, who I'll touch on in a second, really heated up in the second half and hit some huge threes. When they had the frontline guys of Florida spread out, they tried to overhelp from the corner, and that left Sam Walters open. I think he hit three threes from the corner in the second half alone, and that's just from overhelp from Florida and great recognition and pass, baseline passes by Aaron Estrada and Mark Sears at different times. But Alabama dominated the paint, which is something that you can ask Nate Oates, that's something that they really harped on in film throughout the week. Both teams had really good, I felt like both teams had really good offensive rhythm throughout the game. Now, Alabama struggled probably the first 10 to 15 minutes with that rhythm just because they really didn't know what they were like. Their identity was kind of off. I think they had 20 points through 12 minutes, which is, you know, kind of low for them. And they just weren't getting clean looks like they typically do. And they started rushing shots, trying to hoist those threes, trying to get it back, you know, get some momentum going. And that just made it worse. And that kind of ballooned Florida's lead a little bit. But Alabama had 19 assists on 37 shots. Florida had 21 on 35 made shots. And it was a pretty clean game foul-wise, too, I thought. You know, you had a flagrant foul on Muhammad Diabate for grabbing the foot of, I believe it was Walter Clayton, in the first half, trying to get off to a fast break. And what should have been, if it was, you know, seen in, you know, in real time, Muhammad McGee, who I don't think played after that, where he came down with what looked like a pretty intentional elbow on Alex Condon. And I think Nate probably saw that, and he only played 3 minutes that whole game. So I thought it was a pretty clean game. Joe Lindsay's crew did a really good job with letting this offensive masterpiece of a game just kind of flow the way it did. And I know the fans probably enjoyed that as well. So just kind of diving into the box scores, individual box scores for each team. Starting with Alabama, Grant Nelson led the way with 22 points. I thought this was his best game in an Alabama uniform, offensively, defensively. I mean, he finished with 22 points, 8 rebounds, and he had 6 blocks. I mean, he has emerged as a rim protector that Alabama desperately needs. He's starting to get really a lot tougher when it comes to, you know, taking those bigger guys on in the paint. And he gave Samuel a lot of problems early on. Samuel started out 2 of 8 from the field and never really got his rhythm going. But Grant Nelson's becoming that post presence on the interior that Alabama desperately needs. Aaron Estrada had an excellent game as well, flirted with a triple-double. I mean, they're trying to get him a triple-double. 20 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists, had 4 steals. I mean, he was all over the place, had a key put back, kept alive on a missed 3, kept alive, and it went right to Aaron Estrada. If you're digging your nose down into the paint trying to get a rebound, it'll find you more times than not. And he got it, laid it back in for a 5-point lead, or a 3-point lead, excuse me, for Alabama, before Walter Clayton missed a 3 at the end. And Mark Sears got the ball, got fouled with 0.5 seconds left, made 2 free throws, and that's how you got the 5-point victory for Alabama. Now, Mark Sears kind of had an off game. He was not efficient, missed 2 free throws, 1 of 6 from 3, 5 of 15 overall. Did have 17 points, 7 rebounds, 8 assists, so he was well-rounded as well. Just not very efficient shooting the ball, never looked comfortable, didn't look clean off his hands much at all. So that was kind of just a throwaway game for Mark Sears, but even then, he still flirted with a triple-double as well. That's just how good he's been. And Rylan Griffin, kind of touched on him since he started tonight. He finished 2 of 11 from the field. 2 of 8 from 3, 10 points, 6 rebounds. He did not have a good game at all. Hit a big 3 in overtime to put him up by 5. And, you know, sometimes, you know, shooters keep shooting. And he looked rushed most of the night, but he got an open look at the start of overtime, and he nailed it, went up by 5, and then ultimately started the overtime on a 7-0 run before Florida came back with a 6-0 run themselves to make it tight. And Sam Walters and Nick Pringle off the bench had really good games. Sam Walters, I'll touch on first, who hit big shot after big shot after big shot and really kept Alabama in this game. There was a time where Alabama went down by 12, I believe, and in the second half, And Nate or Sam Walton brought back and three. And at one point, they went down by 10. And Sam Walton hit a three the very next possession. And that's just Sam Walters in a nutshell. He's not a streaky shooter because he shoots 45% from three, but he can just make them in droves. The ball seems to find him when he's on fire too. And that's kind of how it was in that second half. He was just camping out in the corner and guys are making great baseline passes, wraparound passes to get it to him. And he wasn't thinking about passing. He was thinking about one thing, and that's shooting the ball. And that's what he does the best. And I really thought after last game where Sam had eight rebounds, he has really gotten tougher. He's starting to put his nose into playing really tough defensively because he figured out that's how he's going to play the most minutes for Nate Oates. Is sure, you can hit threes. That's great. But can you play defense? And at his 6'7", 6'8", frame, he's going to have to be able to play defense to stay on the court. And I thought his defense was really good. He got a couple buckets scored over him where he had great position. But he's battling out there. He's going up against bigger guys when they're switching on pick and rolls and really battling for position. And that's really what's keeping him on the court consistently. And if he can average 18 to 20 minutes a game with his shooting, he's going to be a double-digit scoring machine every single game. He'll shoot six or seven threes a game, and he'll make close to 50% of them. So he'll make at least three or four and get into double figures. Now, Nick Pringle played a larger role than probably what was expected of him because Muhammad Wagi only played 3 minutes. And really, they only played a seven-man rotation. Diabate came in for a short period of time. Wagi came in for a short period of time. But Nick Pringle played 26 minutes, had 13 points. He fouled out, but he had 13 points and 8 rebounds. A couple key offensive rebounds to keep the ball alive to get Alabama second-chance opportunities that they ended up scoring on in the second half. But he ended up taking 13 shots, which was kind of surprising when I saw that in the box score after the game, because he typically only shoots 5 or 6 shots a game. But playing extended minutes, and he had a lot of second-chance opportunities off those rebounds. He had 3 offensive rebounds overall. But, he had a couple alley-oop dunks. He had really good finesse finishes off power moves, getting to the basket, which was really nice to see. If he can finish around the rim consistently, that's going to be a guy that will play into more as well, because they need that second big that's going to finish around the rim besides Grant Nelson. But Jaren Stevenson is more of an outside threat than an inside. So they need Nick Pringle to be the guy who he was tonight, playing hard, even though he fouled out. That's pretty much expected at this point for playing that many minutes. But Nick Pringle being active on the boards and active around the rim in the dunker spot is key for Alabama. Now, kind of touching on Florida's box score, Walter Clayton Jr. has been a scoring machine of late. I believe that's 5 straight 20-point games for him. And he was very inefficient tonight. He took 16 threes out of the 30 total for Florida. Only made 4, but he went 9 of 24 overall from the field. He had 8 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, a block, 27 points. I mean, he was pretty much the offense for a lot of the game for Florida. I mean, he was just carrying them on his back for stretches of it. Now, you had Zion Pullen, who had 17 points, 6 of 16 from the field, 6 assists. Micah Hanlofton, he didn't score a lot, but he got a lot. He got 9 offensive rebounds, which that's just what he does. He got 13 rebounds total, 3 blocks, and 9 offensive rebounds is absolutely insane in 31 minutes. Tyrese Samuel had 14 points, 7 of 16 from the field, 8 rebounds, 2 blocks. Those are mainly their 2 big guy threats. Alex Condon had 10 points in 19 minutes. It was a pretty efficient game. But Riley Kugel only played 3 minutes. Not sure what that was about, if there was something going on there, because this was the type of game that I felt like he would probably thrive in. But, hey, that's just another potential guy that could go off any given day. I'm a big fan of Riley Kugel. And if he ever decided he wanted to come to Alabama, I'm sure Nate Oates would welcome him in, because he's got great length, great size, and I thought he would be an all-SEC player coming into the season, but ended up having a pretty rough year kind of getting going in the rotation with several new guys. And then Will Richard had 17 points, 6 of 13, 3 of 8 from three. I mean, that's just what he does. He's a great outside shooter as well. So, you know, fairly balanced effort from the starting lineup and the bench, similar to Alabama. But Alabama ended up outlasting Florida 98-93 in overtime in Coleman to push Alabama's record to 19-7, 11-2 in conference, and Florida 18-8, 8-5 in conference overall. Now, looking at the SEC standings after the Tuesday and Wednesday games, Alabama's still one game ahead of Tennessee, who struggled pretty badly against Missouri on the road yesterday, but ended up coming out with a 7-point win. They're at 10-3. You got a two-way tie at 9-4 with South Carolina and Auburn. And then Florida and Kentucky at 8-5, right behind them, three games behind Alabama. Now, looking ahead to Saturday, which is going to be a huge game for Alabama, just because if they do win this game, which I believe that this game is ultimately a quote-unquote, I hate saying this, but a scheduled loss. Okay, so when you go through the schedule, say the remaining schedule of the last five games for Alabama, you typically pencil at Kentucky being a scheduled loss. Now, if you look at the ESPN's matchup predictor, they have Alabama as a 61% favorite. I'm not big into that, but ESPN Analytics seems to think that Alabama's the better team. And if you look at different metrics, they are. Kentucky's 20th in the net. You know, they have the same quad one record as Alabama, being 3-6. They do have a quad three loss earlier this year at home. But when you look at Kentucky overall, they're a top 10 offense. They're ranked number 9 in KenPom's adjusted offensive efficiency. And then they're 77th in defense, so they're right behind Alabama. They're very similar in that regard. Now, if you look at it, Alabama is number 1 in offensive adjusted efficiency by a large margin. Purdue has kind of fallen off. Alabama's at 127 overall. Then you got Kentucky, comparing it to them, they're 120. So while Kentucky does score a lot of points, they're not as efficient as Alabama is overall. Now, they do like to play a slower pace, or not a slower pace, but they do like to kind of slow it down at times, because they do have good bigs that they can kind of feed off of if they're on. Like Aaron Bradshaw is a good guy that they can kind of lean on if he's feeling it. I'm not sure if Trey Mitchell's going to play. He's missed the last couple of games with an injury. Antonio Reeves is kind of their go-to scorer. Rob Dillingham had a great game tonight against LSU in the losing effort. I mean, he looked unstoppable in the second half. I think he had 23, 24 points in the second half alone. So they have the backcourt guys to really give Alabama problems. Where it comes as a concern for me for Kentucky beating Alabama, looking at the other end, is that they do rely on guard play way too much. And if Trey Mitchell is out, who's their best big man in terms of scoring, if one of these guards, either Dillingham or Reeves, has a bad game, I'm not sure that they can kind of match Alabama with one or two of these guards not playing well. Now, that obviously depends on Alabama's guards playing well, because they really didn't play all that well from outside today. But they don't have a go-to guy in the post outside of, you know, Aaron Bradshaw has moments. You know, Uganah Uwenzo he's a block machine. I mean, he averages 3 blocks a game. So how much is he going to play? Because he's not versatile at all. He's not a scorer. He's a rim protector. But is he going to be like Oscar Tshiebwe, you know, 2 years ago, to where he just couldn't play? He couldn't play against Alabama. They had John Calipari had to make a decision to take him out of the game and sit him because he couldn't play simple high ball screen pick and roll and 5-out offenses and guard the perimeter. He was getting abused. So this is going to be an interesting matchup to where will Kentucky go 4 guards majority of the game? How much will they use Yowenzo on the inside? And then, you know, I think the X factor is going to be DJ Wagner. I think Dillingham, I think Shepard, I think Reeves are all going to have good games. But DJ Wagner is that missing piece in the backcourt to where, you know, he needs to hit shots. He needs to manufacture buckets. So if one of these 3 guys has a bad game, DJ Wagner is going to have to pick up the pace. And if he doesn't, I'm not sure Kentucky's going to have the firepower if Alabama is on. Now, it solely depends on how Alabama's shooting their outside shot, as I think that Alabama's going to have to hit 12 to 15 threes to beat Kentucky. But if they make the decision to keep Yowenzo out of the game, then Alabama can feast on the inside like they did against Florida. Because Florida has better interior defenders depth-wise than Kentucky. But Ugonna is probably the best defensive player in the conference, hands down, on the interior. So if Alabama's going to win the SEC, you have to steal a game on the road, whether it's Ole Miss, whether it's Kentucky, whether it's Florida. Those are the last 3 road games that Alabama has left. And if they can win one of those 3, it could come down to the Tennessee game on March the 2nd at home, 7 p.m. ESPN, which is rumored to be College Game Day, so it would be absolutely electric in what's going to be a wideout for Alabama in Coleman Coliseum. So you've got at Kentucky, at Ole Miss, the next 2 games. Alabama really, really needs to win one of these 2. And it would be the best if they just go ahead and win at Rupp and take a lot of pressure off going in to Ole Miss into the pavilion, because I think Alabama's a lot better than Ole Miss. I think Alabama should win that game. And if they can win at Kentucky and then turn around and win at Ole Miss, Alabama can clinch the SEC, at least a share of it, I believe. Yeah, clinch at least a share with Tennessee if they win the next 2 games and then beat Tennessee at home. So that should be big enough motivation for Alabama to just go get a win at Rupp, which sounds always like a tall task, but Kentucky's been very vulnerable at home, lost 3 in a row recently, got blown out by Tennessee at home. So it's obviously very doable, but you're going to have to fight. You're going to have to fight for 40 minutes. And I believe this Alabama team is going to be ready for a fight, and Kentucky will too after coming off a very, very poor loss overall against LSU on the road today. So kind of touching on some of the rankings of that, Alabama's at 6 on KenPom, still number 1 adjusted offensive efficiency, 73rd in adjusted defense, up to 12 in adjusted tempo. So they're close to that top 10 mark where kind of Nate Oates wants to see them at, with still a top 5 adjusted strength of schedule for Alabama. They got their 3rd quadrant 1 win. They're 3-6 overall. Florida is a quad 1 win right now. If they do fall 2 spots tomorrow in the updated rankings, they will fall into quadrant 2 territory. But it's always good to get a quad 1 win at home. Let you know that you beat a really good opponent. They're 7-1 in quad 2, and then 9-0 overall in quad 3 and 4. So that's really going to do it for episode 62 of the Double Dribble Podcast. I appreciate everyone listening. I'm going to do another one after the game against Kentucky on Saturday, hopefully recapping another Alabama victory. I'm Jordan Harper, your host, a head basketball analyst at Tide Illustrated of the Rivals Network. You can find me on Twitter at HarperNation24. And until next time, I appreciate everyone's support of the podcast, everyone listening to the podcast. Please go like, subscribe on whatever podcast platform that you listen on. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Adios.